Did you love the TV show Entourage? Of course you did. Well, now's your chance to go see the movie. I have got three pairs of passes from the Remasculate podcast to go check out the preview of the new Warner Brothers movie, Entourage, starring Jeremy Piven. Entourage, the much-anticipated big-screen version of the award-winning hit HBO series, reunites the show's original cast. All the boys are back, and they're back in business with super agent turned studio head Ari Gold. Now, some of the ambitions have changed, but the bond between these boys is still just as strong as they navigate the cutthroat world of Hollywood. I'm going to give it to the first three people that contact me at McGrew@MSN.com. That's McGrew@MSN.com. Here's your chance to check out the movie Entourage before any of your buddies. So contact me now, win one of three pairs of passes to see Entourage, the movie. And now, let's get on with the podcast. Remasculate! Aloha, mud babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew, back from Laughlin, Nevada, where I was doing the Laughlin Comedy Festival. Did it in the beautiful Don Celebrity Showroom. Gorgeous, gorgeous room. Was working with DJ Cooch, the Smash Brothers, Chad and Corey, Joey Medina from the Latin Kings of Comedy, and was all put together by Gabe Lopez. So shout out to Gabe for putting on a great event. Appreciate it. Hope to do it again next year. Today's guest will be Joey Medina from the Latin Kings of Comedy. I had a chance to sit down with him. I would have loved to chat with everybody on the tour, but did not get a chance to. I will get a hold of them individually, I swear. It's good. They're funny, funny guys, and I want to do a podcast with every one of them. But Joey had his stuff, and he wanted to record a podcast, and I said, I've got my stuff, so let's just sit down. We recorded each other's podcast at the exact same time. So that's what you're going to hear when you hear the podcast. It's both podcasts recorded at the same time. We had so much fun. Before I get started here today, I want to give a big shout out and prayers to Texas, Oklahoma, all you guys being affected by the floods. I've been watching it on TV. It looks horrific. I'm hoping you guys are staying safe. Anybody listening, if you have family members, check on them. If you already know they're okay, God bless you guys. So I checked with my family. They're all good down there in Texas. Checked with other family members. Gregory Lindsay, his house was on the top of the hill in the neighborhood, so he didn't flood. Well, but he says they're all okay. It's just a little car floods and stuff like that. All right, well, let's get on with the show. This is from Latin Kings of Comedy and so many other things. Writer, director, comic, former policeman. It's the hilarious Joey Medina. I am sitting here with comic genius Joey Medina, and we are recording his podcast at the same time, so he's going to start his now.
Wheels up, bitches. It's the Joey Medina Show. What's going on, everybody? I am in Laughlin, Nevada. That's right. Laughlin, Nevada with my buddy Steve Mudflap McGrew, and he's recording his podcast right now. Dude, what's up?
this is hysterical. Funny.
Yeah, I've done other people's podcasts, and I've played it at my podcast, and you've done the same.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we're recording two podcasts at the same time.
Yeah, this is not going to be shared. We've got two machines going at the same time.
Yes, my recorder and your recorder.
This is great. We're doing Laughlin, Nevada right now. We're at it's called Don's Celebrity
Theater. Yeah, at the Riverside Casino.
Yeah. And my first time here. You've done this before.
Yeah, I've done this before. I did this last year, and this is probably my fifth time in Laughlin. And you know, the first time, for those of you that don't know, Laughlin is like retired Vegas. If Vegas was retiring, like if when Vegas first started, it was probably like Laughlin, right?
Yeah, that's what I that's kind of the feeling I had, that it's in the middle of the desert and they just threw up a couple of buildings,
right?
And then it kind of grew around it. Yeah, like almost like it's scar tissue around a casino.
And you know, if for those of you that love Vegas and love the energy, but it's just a little too much because it's changed so much now, Laughlin is a place to go, because although you see blue hairs everywhere, you see a lot of old people, but you see a lot of people who are not necessarily old, they're middle age, you know, 40s, 50s, and you see younger people as well, and you're having a good time. There's nobody not having a good time here.
True. But let me ask you something you just brought up. You said middle age, 40, 50. Okay. How many 100-year-old people do you know? Whenever people say middle age, I always, like, somebody go, well, I'm 58. I'm, you know, I'm hit middle age. I'm like, I don't know any 116-year-old people.
That's true. That's true. Well, fuck, I guess we're old.
We're old. I know sometimes I say,
we're pre-old. We're pre-old. This is a bitch. You know, like I tell people, I go, when I was a kid, I wanted to get middle-aged because I thought when you're middle-aged, you get a fancy car.
Yeah.
And you get young chicks.
Right.
But instead, you know, I drive a Prius and I got gout. That's I'm like, this is bullshit, man.
Welcome to the golden years.
You know, and now I'm like, I need glasses to read or to see little detail.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, dude, this is horrible.
Have you thought about LASIK?
You know what? I can't. I'm trying to get back on radio just so I can get a LASIK sponsor.
That's what I. That's,
you did? That's what you did?
Yeah.
Now, did it work? Did it help you?
Well, yes and no.
Okay, talk to me.
I've had 4 LASIK surgeries.
Oh, wow.
Because I was doing the commercial for this one place, and I won't say their name.
Okay.
But I was doing the commercial, and they did the LASIK surgery. And they never want to overshoot because you don't want to overcorrect.
Right, right.
So
right.
They kind of go under, and then they'll come back again and fine tune. Like,
oh, okay.
So the second surgery went wrong.
Ooh.
And I got my eyes kind of semi-fried a little bit. I had to wear contacts, glasses, and hold a magnifying glass to read small print for a couple of years while my eyes healed. And then I got the surgery again to fix my eyes. That was the third surgery. And then the surgeon that fixed my eyes, Dr. Cudarelli, who I plug him all the time on here because he fixed my eyes.
Right.
He did a 4th surgery, and
now it's fine.
And now it's fine.
Now you can see 20/20, whatever.
Yeah.
You can see.
Yeah.
See, that's what I need because I hate squinting. And I, you know, and look, these glasses are cheap. You get them at, you know, the 99 cent store, and you could read fine. But they look corny. They look weird. You know, if you're on a date or you're with a hot chick, you don't want to put on
hold
those
on,
glasses.
Let me pull
hold
up on, my
let me
glasses.
Put on my glasses.
And you know what you
and
do?
Hold my teeth.
And you know what you do too, because you buy the cheap glasses. Like you said, they're funky. You'll buy like a pair of red ones.
Yes, yeah.
Because, you know, like they might almost be women's glasses, but you're like, fuck, I need these to read right now. Just give them to me.
The good thing though is they're so cheap. I have them like all over the place, just in case I'm gonna go. I'll reach and there'll be glasses somewhere.
Every place in the house. Yes. By the phone, by the sink, by the microwave, because you got to read the number.
Uh-huh.
By the bed, just glasses everywhere.
It's fucking horrible. But you know, it's like it's you know, like we were just talking, Rob, off mic is. I'm a filmmaker now, so, you know, when I'm looking on my, I'm doing the settings on my camera, I'm doing anything, I need the fucking glasses, man. And I'm like, this is horrible.
We need a radio show again.
Yes.
I think about that all the time. Like, you and I were talking about this last night.
Right.
How you'd look at something and go, man, if I had still making radio money, I'd buy that.
Yeah, without even looking.
Not even check the price tag.
Not even looking.
Can you have that delivered to my house? Are you sure? Yeah.
Dude, I was making, I don't know, I think I was making like 12 grand a week. That's drug dealer money.
That's
almost.
Drug dealer.
I'm like, this is awesome. Plus, I was doing stand-up. And then, you know how it is when you're doing radio, now you're making more money on stand-up.
Right, because you get a little bit more extra exposure and the name and stuff.
And it's, you know, I'm like,
were you doing a radio in L.A.?
In L.A., yeah.
LA. So
morning radio.
Yeah, I was doing morning radio in Denver. Okay. You were making L.A. money.
Yeah, but the beautiful thing, too, was when I got on the show, they did a huge billboard campaign for me. So they were literally... I was on every bus. I was on billboards all over LA. And the funny thing was, 2 weeks before that, those billboards came out, I was trying to get an agent. I was trying, and I could not get an agent. I couldn't even get one to shit on me if I wanted to. After those billboards came up, everyone and their fucking mothers were calling me. And I took a lunch with everybody.
Yeah.
Expensive ass lunch, lobster
steak. Let them pay for it.
And I made them pay. And I already knew, I ended up signing with Gersh, but it was like, I'm like, I'm gonna milk the shit out of this.
Are you still with Gersh?
No.
Yeah.
As soon as you lose radio, it's like, you lose agents.
Yeah.
And you lose, that spotlight turns off.
Yeah. I talked to them years ago about taking me on because I had been with APA and those guys.
Right.
And had left them. And so I'm talking to Gersh about taking me on and they are like, well, how many gigs do you do a month? What do you charge?
Right.
You don't make enough money.
Yeah.
Wait. That's why I'm trying to get a hold of you.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I want an agent, because you're supposed to make money.
Yeah, people always still say, see, well, just get yourself an agent. I'm like, it's not that fucking, it's not like getting an insurance agent. You just can't walk in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got to already be making money. You already have to not need an agent to get an agent.
Right.
And also, at one point, a lot of the agents sort of turn into just mailbox, et cetera. Yeah, they're just, you go to them and go, hey, could you send out my my stuff?
Yeah.
Because they contacted me.
Right, right. And that's what I hate. Like, one of the things I always hated, and I always told agents or managers, I go, listen, the people that I work with already, that I have a relationship already, you're not getting a dime of that. I already built this relationship. You don't have to do anything, you know? Which they don't like. They're like, well, I'm doing phone calls. I'm like, well, that's your fucking job.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
supposed to do.
I'm making phone calls too. I'm buying stamps too. I'm paying for gas. Look, I've got expenses to run my business. You got expenses to run your business.
Right.
So we're going to work together. Great. If not, let's
You make money, I make money. If money, that's the synergy of this, but not just to keep. That was one of the reasons I let an old agent go, was because I'm paying 15% of everything, but I'm getting it.
Right, right.
So, basically, you're sending out a contract, and I'm giving you part of the money.
Right.
And they would just call me every once in a while and go, any dates we need to block out? Like, they needed to know what I was doing.
Yeah, exactly, fuckers. But you know, one thing is important, especially when you're making big money, is an entertainment lawyer. The entertainment lawyer I had for when I got radio was amazing. And he got me ridiculous money. And it was funny. I remember I was with another funny comic, a buddy of mine, Rene Garcia, we were online to get into Knott's Berry Farm. And all of a sudden the lawyer calls me up and he goes, hey, I got you so-and-so money. And I'm like, oh, awesome. All right, that's good. And I hung up and I'm like, fuck, I hit the lottery. He calls me back 5 minutes later and he goes, oh, no, we just upped it 50 grand a year. I'm like, fuck, I love this guy. This guy's great. And they get, you know, they get 5% forever, you know, or, you know, from as long as you work, and well worth it. But the good thing about that is they're kind of then on retainer. So anytime I did any contracts with anybody else, I always had him look at it and deal with it. And I'm like, this is best investment ever.
Yeah, Louis Anderson had told me years ago, Louis Anderson, right. I didn't say that clear enough, told me really all you need is an entertainment lawyer because they already have the contacts.
Right, right.
They represent agents and managers. They represent studios. They're the ones that actually have probably more contacts than a lot of people.
That's true.
And they're going to do your contracts anyway.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? That's the way to go. And I'm, you know, we talked about this, I think, yesterday. The beautiful thing about being a stand-up comic, some comics will never have any celebrity or real success in their life. And, you know, which is sad. You and I have had it. And it's not there anymore.
But we had it.
At least we could say we had it. But not only that, it can always come back again.
Mm.
Because you one good hit on something and boom, you're back on target.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the beautiful thing is, unlike you know, someone who's popular now from YouTube or Vine or something, we've got talent to take us there and carry us. And one of the problems I made, I think, when I did radio was I kept the management I had before. And that was a mistake. I was being loyal, and I thought that was a good thing. But the bad thing was that they don't have the connections.
Yeah.
And again, people were coming to me. Matter of fact, I remember I got into a huge fight with them. We were discussing something once, and they're like, hey, we got you the radio gig. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I got the radio gig. By something that I did, I produced myself. I did a radio tour, and it just so happens that this particular radio station was they were looking for somebody, and they were in discussion already with Carlos Mencia and Gabriel Iglesias, and I didn't even know any of this. I get up there, and I've been doing comedy 22 years, and I know how to do radio. We do radio every week, you know.
Right.
We're on someone's show.
Some show.
Yeah, and I went and I fucking killed it, man. And so the general manager heard me. And all of a sudden, I get a call from the DJ. He says, hey, man, could you come back tomorrow? I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to promote my thing. And then I just I remember when I was on, it didn't seem like an interview anymore. It was almost kind of like I was hanging out. And I'm like, okay, something's up. This is something.
They were auditioning you.
They were auditioning me. And I'm like, okay, I'm picking this up. So that at the end, I stayed like 2 hours. And the guy said after the show, he's like, hey, man, General Anna heard you. And I think they want to possibly have you on the show. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do radio. Because I actually did radio years ago when I first started doing stand-up in Tucson. And I did a morning show, and it was literally minimum wage. So that's what I thought it was.
Oh, I'm like, $10 an hour?
Yeah,
no,
I'm like,
thanks.
I'm good. I'm good. So he goes, well, you know, just – so anyway, they made me come in like the whole week. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down. So I had my manager and my lawyer deal with them. And then, you know, then I ended up getting on the show, and they made me that offer. I'm like, this is fucking me. I bought my mom a house. You know, I already had a house.
What was your – you must have got a really good contract.
Yeah.
I mean, really right off the bat. Because I didn't. I took a
– oh, okay.
to my story is basically the same as yours. I was on the show.
Right.
They liked me. They were going to replace another DJ. They were like, "Hey, how about that comic that always comes through town?" You know, like so that's how it how I got the deal. But because I didn't have any radio experience and I was new, they're like, they lowballed me. Like, "Get this will get your foot in the door, and if it works for the first year, we'll give you." And they didn't. It was like, you know, not money wasn't going up. I won an award. We got the CMA award. And money didn't go up. Second time, money did. And this Fraser Smith told me, he goes, if you'd been in L.A. with that, with a CMA award, this would be close to a $1 million morning show.
Well,
that's the way it works. And I guess that's the difference between Denver and, I remember one time I had the CMA award right after he won the award. I said to the PD, I go, "This would be a $1 million morning show if I was in L.A. And he goes, "Well, you might get to keep your job."
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they kind of treated it. And and the difference, too, when you said billboards and stuff and buses, I didn't get any of that in Denver. Their thinking is to was to promote the show. KYGO.
Listen to KYGO
in the morning because they want the station to be the star and not you.
Right.
Because you could be replaced.
Yeah, and in radio, you can't, even when you are a star. Or a star. Rick Dees has been replaced. L.A., they just replaced Big Boy. I mean, it's you don't know.
Right.
You don't know.
But Big Boy walked across the street, didn't he? Didn't he go?
Yeah, he's got another station. Yeah. And I don't know exactly what happened. It just happened one day.
Right.
Well, because that's the way he works in radio. It just happens.
Yeah. And then
they change format.
And they never tell anybody.
Nope, never.
They're like, "Whatever happened to Mudflap?" Oh, he decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah. He was like, "No, I was fucking fired." I mean, I knew I was going to be fired because my thing happened during the whole, with the auto dealerships, whatever, the car dealership companies.
When it started going down.
Yeah. And that's, and you know, a lot of people don't know, radio, that's their biggest client. They make the most money from
car dealership ads
and stuff. So all of a sudden, I remember we had a company picnic and it was great. Brand new general manager. The next day he's fired. And I'm like, "Fuck, I know."
Oh, this they're is, cut, going, they're cutting this is
people,
going bad.
People with big paychecks are cutting out. I already knew it. The next week, fucking gone. And I'm like, and I told the guy, "Hey, just give me half." I'm like, he's like, "No, man, dude, the decision came." And the radio the station went to shit and the show went to shit. And, you know, they got a $10 an hour guy or whatever.
Right. That's what they're doing now.
The show, yeah. And it's like, well, all right. Just, you know, it happens. It happens. And it was good. I had a 3-year contract. I got let go after 2 and I got a nice severance pay. Thank you, Mr. Lawyer, you know, and it wasn't anything I did. And that's the weird thing about radio. It's not, you don't have to do anything. It's just, it's about money.
Right. That's what I was actually told when I was, you know, called in after the show. I don't know how they did it
with
you.
Yes, me too, after the show.
Hey, when you get off the air, could you come see me?
That's always a bad
story. I just wanted to run out the back door. But, it was told a budget cut. It was just, you know, we can't afford the size of this morning show anymore.
Right.
Revenues are down. Mm-hmm. It was the same time to the.
Crash
of advertising.
Yeah, there you go. And it's true. And even like I remember Big Boy during that time, they gave him a pay cut. They didn't fire him, but he got a pay cut. There was a big morning show. The company owned my station, owned a Spanish station called, I don't remember what it was, La Raza or something. And there was a morning show guy who's been there forever, named Cucuy, El Cucuy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They fired him 2 weeks after they fired me. So, I mean, that's what they were just. Cutting people. Cause they're not gonna lose their job. People that own the station, the big corporate, the executives, they're keeping their money.
Well, that's one of the things that I don't think, the general public understands about the business is that they think, well, what happened to our guys? Well, we don't matter to them.
Right.
They think it's the music.
Right.
They think it's, you know, we can get a $10 an hour person in here. It's the music.
Right.
But it's not like that anymore.
Yeah,
it's not the music. Because you can get music off of anything you own now. It's on your laptop. It's on your phone. And you don't have to wait for them to play your favorite song. Type in Pandora. I want to hear Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, that's what I do.
There it is. So they don't need radio. What they need is us.
Yes.
And they're too old in their brains to figure out that's not they're living in an old industry model.
Well, that's why podcasts are not so popular because we've got a straight connection and relationship with our listeners.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what morning radio anyway
does. Used to be.
And even afternoon drives. And to be honest, music is to me now it's a problem because they're playing the same shit over and over and people getting bored and they go, you know what, fuck it, I'll just put on my iPod or I'll put on Pandora.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's all you need.
Yeah, we were told at our station, if you heard the same song again, it had been 2.5 hours. Like if you were at your office sitting there, because the computer was repeating every about 2.5 hours.
And that's the way it is. Like when you do a morning show, you do a 4-hour morning show, not everybody's different, but you know, a lot of times it'll be every hour you're redoing the show every fucking hour again. You're doing the same game because you got different listeners.
Yeah.
But the way I ran my show was almost like if it was a TV show. I ran it like that. Like if it was like, you know, and one thing I did was I changed everything. Like, and in my contract, all the games and bits and characters I owned. A lot of stations will say they want to own it, but I was like, no, I own all of these names. So when I'm gone ever, you can't do any of this shit.
Right.
You know, that's what I wanted. But I told myself, listen, let's do games that even if you're not playing, you can't wait to listen to that game because it's going to be entertaining.
Right.
Not a game it's boring. If you're not involved in a lot of these radio games, they're boring. You're like, I don't want to listen.
We did a trivia thing on mine. I called it Zap the Flap. Uh-huh. Mud Flap is my morning name. And it was me hooked to a car battery and doing trivia questions. Right. And they had to beat me at trivia questions.
That's nice. See,
but if
fun.
I lost, right. I got shocked. And the sound effects for were just amazing. And people said they couldn't wait to hear me lose. And then other people said, it scares my child. I guess one letter because my kid cries every time they shock you. So that's the kind – you want those kind of – it's theater of the mind.
Exactly.
You know?
I did once – this was great because we hit the news and the police came on this bit. We had a big – I forgot what it was. We were giving away tickets to go to Puerto Rico and to go to this concert to see these artists and all these things. And what was the craziest thing you would do? So we had people calling in for weeks. And the winner, and this was all set up, but the winner said, listen, I'll tattoo your logo, radio station's logo, on my baby. And we're like, you're a winner. So
it's against the law, isn't it?
I know, but we didn't do it. But we pretended to do it. So we did. We had a real tattoo artist come with a gun. We had this lady who works in the office bring her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we all were like, oh my God, you can't believe you're doing this. And you know, and so we even said that, listen, is this legal? He goes, yeah, as long as a parent gives us consent, we can do this. It's not a problem. You know, it'll hurt for a little bit. And it was funny was the baby was a little, this kid was a little brat. So when she gave me the baby, he started fucking crying. He wasn't a baby. He was a toddler. He was like 2 years old, 3 years old, something like that. So he starts yelling and crying. And the guy had the drill next to the mic. Zzz, and the kid's driving. And we're all like, oh my God. Like, I can't believe this doing that. Oh, look at him. The boards were lit up. Police came because people called the cops on us. And then.
Child protective services.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, we showed them because we videoed everything. And we showed them, they're like, all right, don't worry about it. And then we were on the news and the news were like, it was like prank gone wrong. I'm like, it didn't go wrong. It went right.
It went perfectly right.
This is what we want.
Yeah. It wasn't done. It wasn't illegal. And we're getting press.
And for those of you radio people listening, don't fucking steal that idea because I'm going to do it again when I'm on radio. So anyway, I'm like, this is this. See, I go, this is why the fucking show is kicks ass.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
And you would do radio again as I would, but I have turned down a couple of shows because I don't want to do this kind of radio anymore.
Right.
This corporate. Wouldn't it be great if somebody just a personal one owner station goes, I want to hire you to do a show.
Right.
Do whatever you do.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's the way like Wolf, you know, you listen to the old guys like Wolfman Jack and those guys, they were all individual shows.
Right.
They were free standalone. All day long didn't sound like the exact same station.
Right.
And that's what drives me crazy. I would love to have somebody, I wouldn't even care if it's satellite, just go, we want you to do a show.
Right. And that's the way it should be, man. It's just like, that's why podcasts now are really, I mean, you know, it's funny. There's a gazillion podcasts out there on every topic, which is kind of really good. It's almost like audio YouTube. You know, if there's a topic, if you're interested in Mac computers, if you're interested in the Game of Thrones, whatever it is you're interested in, you know, you can listen to the podcast. Yeah, Big Feet.
I love listening to the Big Feet podcast.
All they do is talk about Big Feet. Big Feet. I love Toe Jam. He's great. The jock there.
And the sidekick, Sexy Toes. Yeah, she's hot.
So, you know, the thing is, there's something for, and, you know, a lot of comics have one. And it's only because we love to put our point of view out there. And, you know, we have our guest on. I used to have a lot of porn stars on.
I remember when I listened to yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
So
cool.
I was thinking, he's got another porn star on.
Dude, those are great. I had a transvestite porn star on. That was fucking cool. I had, and they're just fun because they're train wrecks. You know, these porn stars, not all of them, obviously, but like I became friends with Tasha Rain, who's fucking beautiful and she's brilliant, like smart, smart girl. But then I've had other ones that are like, oh my God, this poor girl. But in the back of my brain, I'm going, this is such good radio. You know what I mean?
You're right. Cause you know, anybody that listens to a porn star's interview is already judging them right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Just today's guest is a porn star. Oh God. No. Why? What's wrong with her father?
But you know, it's a lot of guys love listening to podcasts, and podcasts is great. What I love about podcasts is no competition. Mm-hmm. As far as you're not competing with anybody, because you can listen to a podcast whenever you want.
Yeah.
When I first started doing a podcast, I did it for a network and we were live and every week we had, and that was hard. It was just cause you got to fuck your schedule around. It's hard to get guests. You know.
My girlfriend does a podcast, cause I have a home studio. House. We have a home studio. Uh-huh. And she does a weekly podcast called Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine.
Nice.
And they do it once a week.
Right.
In the studio.
So she does it live.
She does it live. Okay. She's now starting to do it with a camera, you know, you can do those like Periscope and those kind of, she's building that thing where I always tell her, I see how it's easier for you because you're not on the road.
Right.
She works her day job and at night. And she does a great podcast. It's actually doing very, very well. Got picked up by iHeartRadio.
That's great.
Yeah. So, but for us, like you were just saying, we're on the road. Maybe Monday night's not good for me. I might be traveling. Hey, my guest, is not the best guest this week. I don't think I'm going to do one. I'm sure you've done that. Have you ever recorded one and go, I don't think I'm going to.
I had this one guy, and some comics do this, and comics that don't get interviewed a lot, they may be great comics, but they're horrible. Like he was talking to me like I'm doing like a Barbara Walters special or something. I'm like, dude, lighten up. Come on, man. It's like he's trying to be real precise. I'm like, you're being boring. Like, I didn't put his on. I'm like, I'll do another one.
Well, I want to find out what got you into comedy. Cause like we were talking last night. You have been like, you're like the movie Catfish. I don't know was it Catfish? No, Big Fish. Tim Fish, Burton's Big Fish?
Oh, I didn't see that. I know the film.
Well, it's about a guy that his father has told all these stories all of his life. And you're like, those can't be real. And I was saying the other day on another podcast I did, my dad was like that. Because it was like, he was a cop. He was a deputy sheriff. He was a farmer. He was a rancher. But you have exactly been the same exact way. You've been a career change person forever.
I've had three major careers and a whole bunch of shit in between. Three major careers. I was a professional boxer. I was a cop and obviously a comedian. Now I'm also a director and, you know, filmmaker. So when you're a filmmaker, that means you do a little bit of everything, you know, write, produce, everything. And now I'm making some money at it now, thank God. But I've done those things. I've also been a PI. I've repoed cars. I did bail enforcement, which is, you know,
bounty hunter.
Yeah, like bounty hunting. I did. I've used to catch shoplifters at stores. What else? I worked at Madison Square Garden as a kid selling programs. Program, get your program. What else? Let's see. Taught traffic school.
See what I'm saying?
It's like, I've done a little bit of everything.
Because how many, like, most people in the world would be like, well, I worked at a restaurant bussing tables when I was a kid, and then I got this job, and then I retired.
Right.
That's basically the rest of the world.
But you know what it is? I think people like us, you know, and I consider us artists, you want to grow. You want to keep doing stuff. You get stale doing the same shit over and over, you know, and you know, that's why I think, you know, you and I both have three marriages under our belt.
But I don't deal well with captivity is what I tell people.
And it's, you know, it's, so you just get interested in stuff. The way I got into comedy, though, to answer your question, I've always been a comedy fan. Like, I've loved – I used to listen to albums back in the day, you know, mm-hmm. Red Fox, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Cheech and Chong, National Lampoon's stuff. And I was always a big fan. And between friends, I always had a great sense of humor. I would always make my friends laugh. But I was extremely shy. Never in a million fucking years did I think I would be a comedian.
Get on stage.
Yeah. But then when I started, you know, when in the 80s, early 80s, when stand-up comedy started becoming a boom, I would watch every stand-up show. And to me, I was a groupie. I was maybe not a groupie, but I love stand-up. Like, comics were my fucking heroes.
Yeah.
These guys were like the –
Me too. They were rock stars.
I would see them. I mean, and I remember I lived in Tucson, Arizona, and they opened up a real comedy club, which at the time was Laughs.
At the time? Yeah, it's still there.
Well, yeah, but it used to be a real comedy club. And not so much. And I remember I went in the first day, and I remember looking around and going, oh, my God, there's a stage. There's a mic there. And I remember telling the guy, I want to sit in the back. I don't want to go in the front. And I remember watching the stand-up comics go up, and I think it was an open mic night. And I was freaking mesmerized. I'm like, oh my God, I'm here. I can't believe I'm here in a real live comedy club. And, I remember I had a couple of friends from work, and they were like, hey, you know, you should do the open mic thing. And I was like, I don't know. But then I thought, I go, if I could do open mic, I can hang out with these comics. I'm like, fuck yeah. And that's the only reason I wanted to do open mic, just to hang out with the comics. Never in a million years did
it
I
It wasn't
think,
the goal to be a
no,
comic,
not
good
at all.
Comic. It was just,
no.
This would be my buds. I'll hang out with the comic.
So I did that, and I remember the first day I did open mic, it was 3 minutes, and I remember getting to the club super early, because I wanted to go on the microphone to like kind of like feel out the ring. I wanted to go in the mic. I wanted to go on stage in the microphone with the lights with nobody there. I wanted to get over that
fear.
That fear.
Yeah.
And I remember the manager put the lights on for me, and he put the mic on for me, and he went in the office, and I'm on stage holding the mic, and I'm trembling, and there's nobody there, and I'm trembling, and I'm like, and I'm going hello, and you all of a sudden you hear the echo, you hear yourself talk, like, oh my
that
God.
Scared you
yeah,
even
that
more.
Fuck, I'm scared. I'm like, oh my God, and it to me it was like going skydiving. I'm just gonna do it. I don't want to be a professional skydiver. I just want to say I did it, and you know, hang out with skydivers. So the night came, I went up, and oh, I was so, this is another funny thing. I was so fucking nervous that I had to wear dark glasses for some reason that protected me from, because I felt like I was hiding behind
something.
Hide.
They really can't see. They can't see the nervousness in my eyes.
Yes. Yeah. So because I wore dark glasses, I go, okay, I need to do a bit or something. So I pretended to be like some, like a cholo guy. Like, hey, check it out. I did my act like this, eh? And I'm like, now that I think about it, I'm so fucking embarrassed. And I want to throw up.
Hey, it's Toy Medina.
Yeah, check it out. Hey, I did jokes like this. You know, like, and then there were the stupid jokes, fucking dumbest jokes ever. And I did it. And I was like, I was the biggest rush, man. The biggest rush. So I did that like maybe 3 times. And I hung out with the comics. Then I became a cop. And then I really, I still love stand-up, but I didn't do it anymore. And then about 4 years later, I wasn't a cop anymore. I didn't want to be a cop. And I was really, I just broke up with my wife at the time, my second one. And, and I was really fucking depressed, dude. I'm practically homeless, living in a fucking car, really. And then, I remember the people in the club knew me, and I go, I can go there and, you know, they'll let me in free, and I want to cheer myself up.
Right.
And I remember I went in to cheer myself up just to, you know, and there was this comic on stage. I wish I remember who it was, but he was a good comic, and he was this black guy. And I remember watching everybody laughing and him, and I'm like, this is beautiful. And I remember telling myself this. I go, I can literally right now start my life all over. I have nothing to lose. I got no money. I got no family. I got no place to live. I can start my life over today. And I go, I am. I go, I'm going to be a comedian. And that was the day. And I'm 22 years later.
Yeah.
You know, we're hanging out, man. Yeah. Doing a podcast in Laughlin. But it's
working a major showroom.
Yeah.
Like the showroom here.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Some of the greatest people, performers have performed there.
And people don't know, Kinison died on
his way here
to do this show.
That room. Yeah, that's pretty deep. What got you into comedy?
Kind of almost the same exact story. I was working at the newspaper in Houston, doing cartoonist, and Bill Hines, who was another cartoonist at the paper,
right.
His girlfriend was involved with the comedy club.
Okay.
And so I was going through a divorce and went down to the comedy club just to kind of see, cheer up, hey, come right, right, hang right, out. Right, right. And I was like, this is really cool. It kind of uplifted me a little bit. And I thought, I think I could do this because I was already coming up with ideas and cartoons and writing. Right, right. And then it dawned on me that I could go on stage and make fun of my soon-to-be ex-wife. And that's what that became my therapy. That really was, that put me on stage. Right. Then I had that rush, like uh-huh. you said, I can do this again. They were like, man, you want to come back? I would love to come back. Right, thank right. you. And that was my drug. It was almost like somebody shot you up with heroin.
It just feels fucking amazing.
And then I was hooked, and I was doing both. I was working newspaper day and staying out almost all night with mm-hmm. the comics. Because right. this was Hicks, Kennison,
right.
Jimmy Pineapple, all Mike Vance, all the Houston guys. And I did this for about three or four years, and I started getting super tired.
Right.
You know, that's like, I can't do both.
Right.
One of these jobs has got to go. And I was going to go with the paper because it was paying my bills and I was making a living and I had insurance.
Right.
And it was Sam Kinison. I always tell this. It was Sam Kinison who talked me into quitting my day job and doing comedy. It was him. We were behind the building at the comedy workshop one day and I was talking about, then I can't do this anymore. And he goes, brother, this is what you got to be doing. He goes, trust me. You'll regret it. You don't want to be 60 years old and go, I wonder if I could have made it.
Right.
You want to do this.
And look, you just performed in Hong Kong. Who does that?
Like, I know.
Who's like, I performed in fucking China. I mean, that's such a good feather in, and it just feels good. It's like, that is such a fucking accomplishment.
Well, doesn't it make you feel great that knowing that what you thought of, pays your bills.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all that it was. Yeah. Something you thought of pays your bills.
That's a great thing. I remember every time when I first started doing stand-up, I remember every time I bought something, I always remember going, my fucking jokes are paying for this. Like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember the first time I traveled overseas was a military gig, but I went to, I think, Japan, and I always wanted to go to Japan. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to Japan because of fucking jokes. This is awesome.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
One day when I was feeling bad about the career, you know, right. one of those things when you're sitting there, you're like, I'm not getting the gigs that I think I should be. And I didn't get the movie, you know, and
right.
my sitcom that I had a sitcom deal
nice.
And it fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of bumming out. And, I had a friend go, dude, you made it. I go, what? He goes, you've made it. You bought your house with comedy. You've got two cars with comedy. You have worked in the business for, at this point, it's like 25 years. Everything you've done, it's paying your bills.
Right.
You have made it. There's comics that are not paying their bills. And it kind of was a wake up call, like, yes, I am a working comic.
Right.
Whether I am super successful,
right.
it doesn't matter. But like you and I both have been recognized in this casino.
Yeah, yeah.
There's still people that go, hey, were you in comedy?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yes,
I was.
That's
cool. That's always a good thing.
That's good.
And amongst our peers, being respected and being known by your peers is always a good thing. You know, I'm not just patronizing. Everybody, nobody ever says a bad thing about you, which is a good thing. Everybody says you're fun, you know, oh yeah, he's funny. He's fun. And I hope I'm getting that. And I think I do, but it's, and you know, and back into comedy, like you and I met around probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
It was.
I featured for you in, Riverside, Riverwalk.
Riverwalk in San Antonio.
And you had one of your wives with you.
Yeah.
She was managing you or something.
Right. That was my third wife.
Too. Okay. Third wife. And then, but I remember always, you know, it's funny. We meet and we work with so many comedians throughout our careers. And you always remember there was a good vibe or a bad vibe or a zero, you know, a neutral vibe. So, and there's a lot of more neutrals. There's a few douchebags. Robert York, hope he's around. fucking douchebag. But then there's cats like yourself where I just remember I'm going, I don't remember specific. I just remember cool fucking dude. You know, and I remember having a good time.
I remember, that's exactly what I remember about you. I remember having a great week.
Yeah.
That's how you remember it. Was it a good week?
Right.
And I remember having so much fun in the city that time.
Yeah, it was cool, man. And, you know, here we are again, man. And, well, we worked together last year somewhere, right?
We did the Dirty at 12:30 show
before. Yeah, their anniversary show last year.
But I've always kept up with you.
Same here.
It was one of those deals, like, I was always like, oh, cool for him. Latin Kings of Comedy. That's cool. Like,
that was great for me, thank God.
That was great for you. that's one of those things that has not happened for me yet. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done specials, and I've done, like, you know, TV in the UK.
Right.
But for at one point, I was actually a bigger celebrity in the UK than I ever was here. Because I had done their version of The Tonight Show,
and I
did a one-hour special in the UK. Uh-huh. And I couldn't walk down the street in London without somebody going, ah, mate, saw you on TV, you know. That was great. And you're like, why can't I do that in my own country? Why can't I?
Well, it's like they're artists. They're singers and shit. Come over here and they become the Spice Girls. That's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
And they're hot. But it's like, come on. But they come here, they blow up. I'm like, okay, whatever.
But I had a British comic tell me one time, though, making it big in the UK is like being the greatest comic in Texas. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, look at the size of the UK compared to your country.
Right.
And it's kind of right. Like, regionally, if you took the UK and put it in the States, if that's the only area that you're massive, that's why when they come over here and conquer the U.S., they're like, they've done something.
Right. Well, the U.S., I mean, in so many ways, we are the greatest country in the world. I mean, so many ways we're not. We're fucking, this country's going to shit. But we're still the big guy in the block.
Right.
You know? It's great, man. But I still love touring. I think, what was your biggest accomplishment or one of your biggest accomplishments in stand-up? Where you go, that's a great memory. Like, you're like,
Dolly Parton. When I was the opening act for Dolly Parton, I did it for 1 year and rode on the bus, lived on the bus, was treated to the hotel rooms and the celebrity that she had, like security guards would walk me to from my room to the showroom.
Right.
And the money was amazing. That was 94.
Nice.
And so that year was this is showbiz. This is what I've been going for. I was working these crappy clubs to do this.
Yeah.
And then I she was the sweetest person in the world. The tour ended because she stopped touring. It wasn't like they let me go.
Right.
She let the band go. It was one of those this has been great. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Wait,
I just got in on this. I just got here. And that was the greatest year as far as the people that I met. The celebrities would come backstage after see Dolly. Like, I met Liza Minnelli and Elizabeth Taylor one night after a show, came back. It's like, that felt like real showbiz to me.
Yeah, those moments are great, man. And those are the moments that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm a pessimist or maybe I'm just, but those are moments that I'm like, oh, good, this is great. But then I also have a realization in my head going, this is going to end. It's unfortunate. Like, and I did that when I got radio. When I remember my first day on the air as official that I'm on the radio station. I remember telling myself this, and I hope I didn't jinx myself, but I go, this is the best day of my life. This is the best thing that's happened to me. And I go, it's going to be the worst thing. I go, cause when it goes,
it's going to hurt bad.
Yeah. So one of the things that talk about management again, I remember telling my management, I go right away. I said it that first week. I go, I need another gig like this. Something that's going to pay me this much money. I need something. Work on it. Get me something else. I don't care what
you realize.
Yes, because if this goes, I still want to be making this money.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. They couldn't do it. They tried. They couldn't do it. And I'm like, I fucked up. What I should have done is there were two guys who were managing me. One was a douchebag and the other one's my friend. And I still consider him a friend. Oh, fuck. Thanks. I have to call him back for something. And what I should have done is fired him as managers and hired him as an assistant. Cause that's one thing I should have had was an assistant during that time. Cause I was trying to do too many things. And that's what I should have done. But, you know, shit happens. But one thing too, I remember, I don't know if you went through this. I remember telling myself, I don't want to be one of those assholes that gets a thing like a radio gig and then people think he forgot his friends.
Or
now he's changed. So what I did was now that I'm radio, I'm doing morning radio show. I live an hour away by now, from LA, from the station. So I'm up at 3 in the fucking morning, right? Everybody in LA who had a comedy room, you know, the bar or whatever, every, you know, weekly comedy room, everybody was hitting me up. Hey, do my room. You know, because one, they could say I'm on it.
Yeah.
And two, I'll probably mention it on the radio. So I didn't want to say no. So I said yes to everybody. So Monday through, and the weekends I was doing my gigs. So literally every fucking night I was out in LA, these shows, they don't start at 8.
No,
they start
at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. And I would go last. So I would go on, you know, at 12 or 11:30, get home and have 2 hours of sleep. There were times I had to literally pull over on the side of the road to take a nap and then rush home for a shower and then go back to I remember one time I ended up driving straight to the radio station because I was up all fucking night. And it got so bad that I got an apartment next to the radio station because I couldn't make the drive anymore. It was only an hour. Well, not even an hour. It was 45 minutes. It was Pomona.
Right.
And I'm like, I just can't make this drive. So I had a house that I was never in, and I was in LA all the time in the apartment. So I'm paying this, I'm paying that. And I'm like, because I didn't want to be the douchebag that says, no, I can't do it.
Right.
Oh, you're too good now? I'm like, oh, no.
But now looking back, don't you wish you would have said,
Yeah,
I won't do this. I'll do one a week or I'll do this, but I'm not telling you no. I'm just telling you I can't right now.
Yeah, and I would just be honest and go, guys, I wake up at 3 in the morning. I can't. I'm in bed at 7:30 now. At 7:30, I remember being home watching TV, trying not to fall asleep, and falling asleep is on 7:30, and then having my alarm come up, and just dozing off. And I was nervous that I had to wake up and –
Well, I used to stay up all night when I first started radio because I came right out of stand-ups, as you did, right into radio. And I was used to not going to bed till 4 or 5 in the morning. That was just I'm used to that.
Right.
And they wanted me there at 5. So I just started staying up all night and get off the air at 10. And this was still in the days when they wanted you out, and out the door. Don't hang around. So I'd get off the air at 10 and just go home and go to bed.
Right.
And I did that for the first year of doing that. And it was, then it hit me, like you're saying, I couldn't stay up past a certain time.
Yeah, man, it's
like your body just went, now you're on morning radio time.
Yeah. You know, it was funny back then, you know, I was single, I had all kinds of chicks and I'm like, I'm too tired to fuck. I'm like, I just can't. We're going to have to fuck at 4 or it'd be anything past 5.
You're going to have to schedule this.
I can't do this. I remember there was this hot chick I was dying to bang, dude. I can't. She's a gorgeous black girl and she was like a model. And she lived in the valley and I lived in Pomona. This was before I got the apartment. And I remember finally she goes, okay, well, let's go out, you know, and she knew we were going to go out and fuck. So I'm like, okay, you come over and you spend the night and I'll drop you off in the morning.
Yeah.
She's like, no, I can't spend the night. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking drive you back. I can't. I go, you know what? Skip it. I said no. I'm like,
Never mind then.
She was that hot, but I'm like, I can't do it. I just, no way in the world I'm going to drive over there. Oh, and then I said, I said, listen, how about if I just get a hotel room? She goes, I don't want to have sex in a hotel room. That's not right. I'm like, what are you talking? Who gives a fuck? We're going to fuck anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm not doing it. Let's not do it in the car. So it faded away.
It's funny you said, talk about that attitude of wanting to just do everything and party. Right. We were watching something one night. My girlfriend and I were watching something about stand-up comics. And they were like, oh, it was the 80s, and we were just partying our ass off. We were just monsters. We were drinking everything we get our hands on, sleeping with anything that came along.
Right.
And she goes, was it really like that? I go, oh, I don't want to answer this.
Honey, I said, it's rated theater of the mind.
Because that was the days, That was just the way it in the 80s.
Yeah.
Rock, they were the rock stars.
Yeah. I got in after that tier. I got in, I think, late 90s, maybe. No, I can't be.
I met was about 94, 95. Okay, that's what I remember. So then, I don't know how long you've
done. So then I probably did it I probably got in 93, 92. It was probably right before that.
Yeah.
I featured for you.
Yeah.
And I remember I moved up the ladder kind of quick. That was because I was always working hard.
Why I remember I followed your career. It was like, damn, Joey's doing great. We just wrote, look at it. Now he's on this show. Now he's on that. Now he's on the radio. Now he's on, you blew up.
Yeah. Now I'm a lazy fuck. So now I got to get back. But you know what it is? It's relationships, man. When I'm in a relationship, I kind of give it a lot, and it's like it just takes too much out of me.
And it drains you.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for a comic to be in a relationship if you really want to just focus on comedy. Neil Brennan said something that's really really wise. He goes, "Nothing good that's ever happened to me in my career." Oh no, he says anything that good has ever happened to my career came or evolved from being at a comedy club. I'm like, you know what? Fucking makes sense, man.
Yeah.
You know, you find out who's booking things. You work with stuff. You meet, you work on material. Whatever it is, there's an energy there, man.
You have to be around. Well, I said this to my girlfriend, so I'm not saying this out of turn. She's not going to be shocked when she hears this. Right. But at one point, I go, I've got to go back to the comedy clubs.
Yeah.
She goes, what? I go, I can't sit around here every night and watch TV.
Right.
You know, just because I don't have a gig doesn't mean I shouldn't be at the comedy club.
And it's hard for
it
hard
doesn't
for
mean I shouldn't be working on new material.
Right.
So that a few months ago, I actually started doing that again. I actually said I'm going to go do 5 minutes down at the comedy club. Right. Why? Because I got a new 5 minutes I want to work on. So we had to go through this little period of I have to go be a comic. She met me on radio. I was a DJ.
Right. Oh.
So she was used to that schedule. It's a whole new schedule. This is a comedy lifestyle now.
And they don't get it. They don't, I understand.
And I'm lucky she does.
Okay, that's good.
That I'm lucky.
But they don't understand that after the show, we hang out, we party, we drink. And when I say party, I'm talking about we just having a good time. We go to a bar. And it's not necessarily, cause now I've slowed down, you know. I mean, I still love pussy, but I don't really go out after anymore. I like looking, I like flirting, but I'm just one of
you're more into catch and release.
Yes,
you're like an old fisherman.
Yes,
now.
There you go. Here, go back in with that ripped up mouth. You know, it's like I just want to. I like hanging out with the guys. I like that's what I like. I want like hanging out with good people. Now, trust me, if it's a comic I don't like, I'm staying away from that guy. But I just want to hang out. And there's plenty of times where I will go back to my room because there's nothing happening. Yeah. I'm like, I'll just go back to my room, hang out.
Well, that's sort of like last night after the show. Great show, by the way. You killed
thank you.
It.
You too. That you was destroyed
great
it.
Show. But you guys were going to go out, and right. I'm like, I think I'm just going to head back to the room. And then I'm talking to can't remember which one, Corey or Chad, because they're twins.
Yeah, the twins.
Yeah. And they go, he goes, yeah, I just went back to my room. I was asleep by 11:30. I'm like, see, some of us just can't hang anymore.
Well, the night before we got here, Cooch and I got here the night before, and we partied our ass off, and then I did the whole grandpa thing, and that was fun.
Oh,
then,
tell my listeners about this.
Okay.
You've got this new thing. It's like a theatrical mask, like a Hollywood mask.
It's like Mission Impossible. If you remember when they peel off the mask, these masks are very, they look very real. I didn't pay for this.
It fits you perfectly, so you would assume it would.
Yeah. But it's a $1,200 mask. And it's, you know, it moves with your face. It looks real. So anyway, if you saw the movie, Bad Grandpa, it's similar to that. So I bought some old man clothes and stuff, and I went to the nightclub here at the hotel. And I was doing Michael Jackson, but I did it, you know, I played it off where I still like an old man, so they didn't think like
you gave yourself a little arthritis.
Yeah. So they me, oh, this guy's got to be a kid. But it was hilarious. And people were coming up to me dancing. The girls were dancing. You know, they were coming up near me. Even guys were dancing with me. Come on, grandpa. And he was like, I'm like, this is hilarious. I love it.
And the other part that's so good is you have long rubber balls.
Yes. They're probably about
at least a foot long or more.
No, probably a foot and a half long. These rubber balls, there's going to be a lot of fun happening with these things.
Are you going to go around and film some stuff with it?
Well, I want to do some pranks, but fucking everybody's doing different shit right now. But I will tonight. Tonight we're going to the South Point Casino in Vegas after our show here in Laughlin, and I'm going to do a set. I'm going to do a 5-minute set as Grandpa.
Do you have new material that's for Grandpa? Or are you going to do part of your act as
both?
Grandpa?
Both. Okay. I wrote some material for it. And I'm going to use some of my material I think that would fit for that character. And what I did was, I tried some of it out on purpose, but I did something the other day at the nightclub. They were going to play a song. So I said, I want to dedicate it to my wife, Eleanor. I go, my wife Eleanor passed away today, a year ago today, and everybody's like, oh, I go, I hate that cunt. She cheated on me with a colored fella. So, fuck that bitch. And everybody's dying. And so I'm going to do that tonight, and then I'm going to go. But now I added, I wrote a joke this morning. I go, yeah, I caught her. I put a security camera, and I caught her on tape. I go, it looks like a goddamn porno. Power driving Miss Daisy.
I'm gonna power do driving Miss.
I'm gonna do that tonight. I'm gonna open with that, and then you know I'm gonna do. But then I'm gonna do. And then I wrote when I was like, I go, you know what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Not me. If I get laid, I'm telling everybody. Grandpa got some pussy. I hope it's going to work. Oh, I think it's going to work.
It's the dirty at 12:30
show. Yeah, and
show.
The show is the dirty show, so it's got to be dirty. So I really think. Now, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know if at first, originally, I'm thinking at the end of my set, I'm going to take the mask off. But then I'm going, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should keep the illusion there.
It might, because it might be a whole new.
Yeah,
like,
you never know.
Kind of like, what was that I can't think of his name. That did Taxi.
Tony Danza?
No. No, the other guy.
Oh, Latka. Yeah. You're talking about, God.
He had the character, Tony Clifton, he had the
yes.
the character
right.
he did that no one ever knew whether it was him or his buddy, Bob Zmuda.
Right.
Because they didn't know, but they were both sort of doing it.
Yeah.
So you could create this whole new illusion of, is it him? Is it still, is it still Joey under the mask?
So I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know. I honestly don't think I'm going to do this as a career move and try to do this. But if it happens and people offer me money, I'm like, I'll do it. You know, Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Did you see the movie?
I did not see it.
Oh, no. Oh my God. It's hilarious. It's one of the funny. He gets his dick stuck in a machine and he's pulling it and he has a rubber balls too. Uh-huh. The same thing. There's a scene where he sharts in a diner. It's one of the funniest, but it's hilarious. I was cracking up hard.
And he did it with the kid, right?
That's what makes it even work. Yeah, because he had a little kid with him.
Yeah.
So it was fucking brilliant. It was a great, great movie.
I will have to watch that.
Yeah, it's a guy movie. You watch it. It's not brain rocket science, but it's great. It's a great flick.
Bad Grandpa.
Grandpa. Great thing. Yeah. So if you've seen Bad Grandpa, this is basically this character. And the good thing is I think, Gabe is going to, record it today, so I'm gonna have a little video thing of it and see what happens. I'll put it up on YouTube. You never know.
So, what is your industry goal now? Is it comedy or movie? Because I know you're talking about the filmmaking. Is what do you feel like energy wise you're focusing a little harder on?
Probably stand up is. I'm always gonna do stand up. Literally, and I always tell people if I win $1 billion tomorrow, I'm still going to do stand-up comedy.
Me too.
I'm still going to do stand-up.
I just wouldn't do Butt Lick, Arkansas. Yes. That's what I always say. I go, I'll pick the cities that I want to do, but I'm not just going to keep saying, I'd love to go back to Penguins and see them.
Exactly. You know? No, but I tell people, I go, instead of saying who books that, I go, who owns that? I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
I want to work in that club. I'm gonna buy it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wouldn't there be some clubs, too, that you would buy and just burn the fuck down?
Fuck yes, yes. Laughs comedy club.
He doesn't mean that, Gary.
No, I don't, Gary. No, but Gary could be douchey sometimes. But you know, at least he's an honest douche, to be honest. You know what you're dealing with. And honestly, that means more to me than somebody stabbed me in the back. So that is okay. But actually that would be the first club I buy. Only because that was my club. That was my home club. That club really honestly means a lot to me. That's where I first started doing stand up. That's the first comedy club I ever stepped foot in.
Yeah.
I would buy it and I would run it right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The first club that I ever worked at in Houston, the Comedy Workshop, and I have not seen this, but somebody said, oh, they turned it into a dry cleaners or a washeteria or something like that. Like, really? That was the first club? That was the first Houston club? It almost like it should be a historical marker.
Oh, was it Comedy Stop or Comedy?
It was Comedy Workshop.
Oh, Comedy Workshop.
Comedy Workshop. Okay. The Laugh Stop was another one.
Oh, Laugh Stop, that's right.
And then there was another one. There was two Laugh Stops. And one of them got bought, and they just changed the letter. It went from Laugh Stop to the Laugh Spot.
Yes, I remember.
They just moved the letters.
That's lazy, but it's creative. I did both those clubs, I remember. And I did Spellbinders, I remember.
I used to love Spellbinders.
She passed away, right?
Yes,
passed
away. I heard that.
Yes, and she knew how to run a club. She did an exponent, and you would get 2 weeks in a row, which was great. I'll give you a Robert York story. You know Robert York, right? Okay. I don't know if you're friends
with Cowboy. I worked with him once years and years ago.
So this is what happened. I just finished doing 2 weeks there. And this is when I had no place to live at the time. I was literally working the road everywhere. So I asked her, I go, hey, listen, can I feature the third week? Can I do something like that? And she goes, what was her name? What was her name? Elaine or? Oh, don't matter.
I can't remember.
Great lady though. And I mean, she goes, listen, what I'll let you, if you want, you can sleep on the couch because I had the condo back
condo,
then.
Yeah.
And she goes, you can open. I'll pay you feature money, but if you can MC. I'm like, oh, amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So Robert York was the headliner of the week I was featured. So now he comes in the condo and he's smoking in the fucking condo. And I'm like, dude, go on the fuck up. There's a balcony right there. Go outside, man, you know? But he's a headliner and I had respect. And I just headlined 2 weeks in a row, fucking row. And, so then, the first night, everybody who came to the first 2 weeks show came to see me again. So I get a standing ovation. I'm emceeing. I get a standing ovation and I got a standing ovation as a headliner. So we're at the bar and I'm drinking. I'm drunk as fuck, right? And people are sending me shots too while I was on stage. It was fucking crazy. So the next day, before the show, I'm at the bar again. And the bartender's like, hey, what do you want something? I go, no, give me some water, man. I fucked up last night. And Robert's at the other corner and he goes, yeah, it was embarrassing. And I'm like, so I go like this to him. I go, you know what's embarrassing? Your fucking act. So that's what I told him. So now I'm bringing him up like this. And I go, he fucked with the wrong guy. And then, you know, he has those handlebar mustaches. Mustache, uh-huh. So this was right after, OJ and stuff. Yeah. So I go like this. I go, this next comic looks like, Rob Goldman's dad or whatever, Ron Goldman's dad. I go, he's a great juggler and maybe you'll hear a joke or two. Let's put your hands together for Robert York. And that's the way I was bringing him up. And he didn't say a fucking word. Like, I was like, oh, fucking. I was looking at him like, oh, dude, don't insult me like that, you fucking asshole. But he got upset because I got a standing ovation, you know, as a fucking, as an opener.
Yeah.
He's a douchebag. But
those things happen and you can be nice about it. That happened to me with Bobcat Goldthwait years ago.
Oh, okay.
I was headlining a club and they had a chance for Bob to come in and do a weekend, like one night weekend thing. Right. They're like, I don't mind. I'll go before.
Yeah.
And got a standing ovation and Bob was not particularly happy with it. I remember that. But I worked with him a few years later and he goes, oh, I remember you. You got the,
cool.
And, you know, he was very cool and almost in a comic way. Good for you. You had a great show that night. Not a dick about it. You know?
That's good. Now, do you remember the first standing ovation you got?
Yes, it was Savannah, Georgia.
Nice.
At the Comedy House in Savannah. And I remember thinking that
how'd you feel?
As high as a kite.
Yes.
And thinking that I need to do this every show. I have to do it.
Right.
And it's almost like a ball player that realizes what the arc is and getting the ball out of the park. And it's an unnatural setting you give for yourself.
Yeah. But it's the greatest feeling in the world.
It's the greatest feeling in the world.
The first time I ever got a standing ovation, I was opening for Gabe Kaplan at the comic strip, El Paso, Bart's room. And I remember I finished my set. I turned around to grab the mic stand, to put it back in front, put the mic in, and people were standing. And I went, I remember I got off stage. I brought up Gabe. I got off stage. I went to the payphone. I called my mom, collect. There was no cell phones back then. And I'm like, Mom, I got a standing ovation. She's like, oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, it was like nervous, like, oh my God, like, what did I do? You know, this was the fucking greatest fucking feeling in the world.
Yeah.
You know? And there's so many, now, you know, I've gotten them before. I mean, obviously you get less standing ovations. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? I want to do it again.
Yeah. What's the arc? Am I swinging too soon? Am I swinging too late? But I think it's the audiences.
Yeah, it's the audience. It's the chemistry between us and the audience.
Yeah. And I think the audiences aren't theater people a lot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because a lot of times you'll see people that watch a show and you see them smile a few times and they come out and tell you, that was the best show we've ever seen.
Yeah, and you're like, but why didn't you laugh?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of people now that don't go to theater. They watch TV with no reaction and go, I really liked that show.
Right.
So I think there's some kind of psychological thing going on where they're not going out to plays and they're not doing live theater and, you know, You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally hear you.
I don't know if they know how to do
participate,
be an audience.
No, it's true. You know,
because I don't know about kids today, but I remember when I was a kid, the school used to take us to stuff like the symphony the opera, or you had to go to the planetarium, so you knew how to act.
Right, right.
In situation, I don't know if schools still teach that kind of
That's a good point.
Social situation to kids anymore.
No, everyone's socially, their heads are down, they're looking at their phone.
Right.
You know, and it's just completely different. The world really, truly has changed. I mean, like when I tell people, you know, there was a time there was no cell phones. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, there was no cell phone. Nobody had a cell phone. What'd you have? We had pagers. What? What's that? You know what I'm like? And it's weird.
Do you remember where you got your first pager?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was the shit.
Me too.
Yeah.
I got it at the Pager King in L.A. It was called
nice.
The Pager
King. Yeah, those
King.
Stores are huge. Everybody had pagers, different ones, and they've gotten a little better.
And the cases were funky. You had bright colors.
And I remember I was a cop during the pager times, and it was cool. It was – cops communicated cool with pagers because we used codes, like 10 codes.
Yeah.
10-9, 10-8, 10 – so – it was easy to, like, we could actually, it was like our texting.
Yeah.
Like, if I wanted somebody to call me, I would just say, 1021, 0800. That means call me at eight in the morning, whatever. So they would get that. Like, it was so hilarious.
Right.
And then, but then, you know, there was always, you could make words, hello, and then you put, you know, you put in the right number and you turn it around and you get a word.
Yeah.
So,
and you get to fight with your girlfriend because she's like, who's Losel?
Yeah.
And why is she? It means the battery's going dead.
Yes. That's hilarious. But it's funny, dude. It's like pagers, man. As soon as you get a page, you look for a payphone.
Yeah.
You're like, you look for a payphone and fucking.
Well, then they went hand in hand for a while because you needed a pager and a cell phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everything was chart, every cost.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So if you even got a miss, like that's the wrong call,
right.
You're paying for that. So people used to page you.
Right.
And then they say,
page me first and I'll call you.
Yeah. So they worked hand in hand for a long time there.
God damn, dude.
Do you remember your first cell phone?
Oh, yeah. Check this out. I remember exactly. My first payphone, my first cell phone was, remember the big white block ones with the white black antenna?
Yeah.
Back then, Sears was selling the phone. And you couldn't buy one without getting the plan, connect it. You had to connect it.
Yeah.
You had to pay for the plan. And back then you needed good credit. So I tried getting payphone and they were like, man, sorry, you know, that your credit got turned down. So I couldn't get a phone because I had bad credit. So I'm thinking, how the fuck can I get this? So I called up Sears and I got the people in charge of electronics and I said, hey, this is so and so from AT&T. Yeah. Our systems are down now. So for the next 4 hours, if people are going to buy a phone, just sell it to them without having them sign up for the service. And they're like, okay, no problem. So I go in there half an hour later, and I'm like, hey, guys, I want to pay a phone. Do I set it up? Oh, no, you can't set it up. You can just buy it. I'm like, all right, cool. So I bought it, and that was it. And then I just, you know, look at, I forgot how I think
you set it up. You just walked around with a non-working phone?
No. I got to connect it. But the thing was, I could pay the phone bill. But
you didn't have to have approved.
Right. Once I had it, I had it.
Yeah.
It was not a problem. They wouldn't approve you for the phone without it. So,
right.
So that's the thing. So I could pay it, but I needed to buy it. I forgot how it was. It was
you
so fucking long.
You get a credit check.
Yeah, you got to get a credit check. That's what it was. But, so yeah, I did that and I scammed it.
I remember my first was not the big phone because I couldn't afford that, you rich bastard.
I couldn't either. That's why I had bad credit.
So I remember the first one I bought, it was an Audiovox.
Okay.
And it was smaller than the brick phone, but a little bit bigger.
Uh-huh.
And it cost me almost $1,000.
Holy shit.
And I left it at the mall like 2 days after I got it. Like, I left it sitting in the food court, and I freaked out. You know, when you realize you've left something, ran back down there. Can you tell us what it looks like? It's a phone. It's a black Audiovox phone. Does it do anything? When you turn it on, what does it say? Because a lot of people at those times were putting in names or numbers
when
you're like, I don't remember. I just got it. And I was freaking out. And I was like, is this it? I was like, yes.
Thank you.
It was such a I remember that, how soul crushing. I thought I've just really screwed up.
Right, right.
But I've done that so many times since then. I'm constantly, I don't know about you, but I'm constantly leaving cell phone somewhere.
It's scary. Someone stole my fucking phone from a McDonald's in El Paso once, and I was pissed off. And, you know, it sucks. You're like, fuck, all my things are on there. Thank God things are sunk now, and, you know, your shit's up in the cloud somewhere. And,
right.
You know, but you got to buy another fucking phone. It was another $600. I'm like, this motherfuckers. I'm like, I'm so fucking pissed off. But, what are you going to do?
That's what I lost. Someone stole my, my BlackBerry, the Palm, when the Palm came out.
Yeah, yes.
And it was a phone and a PDF
at the time.
Yeah, all that thing. And I left it in a Barnes & Noble. I've been sitting reading and
I found one there once years ago. I'm just kidding.
But it was the same sort of deal. I had walked out to my car, realized I left my phone, came back in.
Gone.
It was gone.
Did you look around and see a suspicious face? Somebody, you know, sneaky fuckers?
Yeah.
I can't, you know what's funny, dude?
I hate thieves.
Yeah, it's funny. I've done so many horrible things in my life. I've cheated. I've done this. But I can't steal.
Because you wouldn't want to happen to you.
No, it just feels like a weird violation. You know, trust me. I remember one time I found a purse. This was I was young, way younger. It was before stand up. And it had like $200 and a bunch of stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to go buy a bunch of stuff. And I did. I took the credit card. And I went, I bought some stuff. I bought clothes and merry-go-round. I bought some shoes. And then I remember going, this is so wrong. I took everything back. And then I was going to call the woman anyway. She had a check. I called the woman. I go, listen, I found your purse. She was like, oh my God, thank you. She was a nurse. I remember her nurse license was on there. So I could never do it. I can't steal. Like, or if I find somebody, I'll work hard to get that person their shit, you know? And it's the right karma, whatever. But, this I'm okay with. I remember one time I was buying stuff in at a Target. I bought a PlayStation 4. No, PlayStation. It wasn't a PlayStation 4. It was a PlayStation. I think probably the first one. And a whole bunch of stuff. And this is when I had money. And the cashier guy recognized me, signed an autograph and stuff. And I right, cool, thanks. And I get to walking to my car. I'm looking at the receipt. I'm going, this one's kind of fucking light. He didn't charge me for the PlayStation, and he charged me for the table. And I'm like, I'm going to turn back. I'm like, wait, whoa, hold on. Maybe he did that on purpose? Maybe that's just God going, hey, good job.
A little bit of celebrity.
Yeah, so I'm like, well, fuck it. Because he's not going to – it's not going to affect him. Nobody knows that happened.
Yeah.
Now, if he would have gave me extra money, I would have gone back. Because right. That's happened to me before. Right. I remember I went someplace. I bought something at a gas station. I gave a guy a 20. He gave me change back for 100. And I was like – and I was broke at the time. And I was like, sir, you gave me more money than you should have. Because that would have came out of his pocket.
Right.
But to me, that's stealing.
Yeah. I had to do that with my son one time when he was little. I went into a store and I bought a sleep mask because work in the hotels and stuff.
Right.
And I got to the car and it pulled it out and there was two of them. They had stuck together.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, sweet, you got an extra one without paying. Had he just said, sweet, you got an extra one? But when he said, without paying,
that's when you're like, oh,
I go,
fuck.
Come on, we got to go back in. What? I go, this doesn't belong to me.
Right.
I had to do the lesson to my son.
So he just cock blocked you, your son. He just ruined a good deal you had.
That's a lesson.
That's a lesson. You got to teach that lesson.
I had to teach the lesson.
You got to teach that lesson. I think I stole a box of gum once and my mom or my aunt or somebody made me bring it back and it was so embarrassing. And I was like, this is horrible.
I had to do the same exact. Yeah. My mom, I stole when I was a little kid, probably 5 or 6, there used to be these things that you stick on. There were stickers, but when you shot them with a water pistol, it looked like you bled.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I don't even know if they even make them anymore, but there was, and I really wanted them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And got home, and my mom goes, where did you juice? And I had to go back, and the embarrassment of, I stole these. I'm a criminal. Never again. So I think there is good in shame.
Yeah.
People want to take shame out of society today, but I think shame is a great teacher.
And living, and also owning up to shit. If you own up to shit, you won't make the mistake again. If you go, you know what, I made a mistake, I was wrong. I do that with book. I remember, or not, you know, like sometimes I double book by accident, and I'll call up one of the bookers, and I won't lie and go, hey, I can't make the gig, my car broke, or someone's mom's dying. I just, I'm like, you know what, I made a mistake, man. I double booked, I screwed up. It's my bad. I go, next time, look, I'll do it for less money or something. Cause I think that's the right way to do it. Cause they're expecting a lot.
Yeah, that is the right way.
When you're
telling
the truth, they're like, well, all right, this shit happens. You know? I mean, some people get upset, but I'm being honest with you. I fucked up. It's my fault. You can be mad at me if you want.
Yeah, honesty is absolutely the best way.
Yeah.
And I was always raised, your word is all you have.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, that was it. If you tell somebody you're going to do something and you don't do them, they'll never trust you again.
Right, right.
That's what your handshake is, your contract. But the world isn't like that.
No,
but
it's
that
not.
Is the way that I was raised. And I remember my grandfather was chief of detectives in Houston. At one point, like I said, my dad was a cop. I was raised, you know right from wrong.
Right.
If you ever go to jail, we will never get you out.
Wow.
And that was a fear that was in me all my, cause you're right. I do know right from wrong. I do know don't break the law. And even in the days when I semi-illegally smoked pot, cause like Colorado is,
yeah, now it's legal.
Is legal.
Right.
But in those days, if I did it, I locked the door and would hide in my house and watch TV because I knew it was against the law. I never could understand why people like, let's go to a concert and get like, right. You know, you can go to jail for that. So maybe that, you know, my head never got outside of you can go to jail
well,
for that.
That's good. It's good karma, man. All right, man, let's wrap this up. We got to go to a movie soon.
And we're at an hour and 12 minutes.
Yes. I screwed up. I need a copy because I didn't press record on my recorder.
Oh, no.
Thank God you're recording. This would be horrible because this was a great podcast. So you are listening to the podcast, thanks to my buddy Steve. But where can people find you?
I always just say Google Steve McGrew, but you will find my Instagram, my podcast. I have two Facebook pages. Video all over YouTube. And the same thing for you, Mr. Joey Medina. How do they find you?
Well, if you go to joeymedina.com, you'll get all my stuff. But if you Instagram, Twitter, if you go to Instagram and Twitter, it's Joey Medina Comic. And for my Facebook, one of them is full. So if you go to Joey Medina fan page, you can we can communicate there. You can see everything I'm doing. And I appreciate especially all the new listeners and my listeners that are listening, guys. Thank you so much. It means a lot. And and I always tell my listeners and,
subscribe.
Subscribe, please. It helps us. Look, you're listening to our podcast for free. You're hopefully being entertained while you're doing it. All we ask is you hit the subscribe button. And when you do that, it's a benefit because next time there's a podcast, you get it automatically.
Automatically.
You don't even have to look for it.
Yeah, especially, and that's good because like you and I were talking earlier in the podcast, we don't do them on a regular basis.
Right, right.
So it's not like every Monday, I'm going to go get it. No, whenever it happens,
you
get it.
And maybe you'll get two in a row. Maybe you won't get one for 2 weeks. And it helps us, and it also lets us know how many people are listening. And I'm sure you have the same thing. We have listeners around the world.
Around the world.
It's amazing.
When you look at Google Analytics on where you're being listened, like, they're listening in Finland.
Yeah, no kidding. You got Finland? Who books that? No, I'm kidding. So I want to say hi, especially to all the listeners around the world. And, thanks for listening, guys. For me, this is the Joey Medina Show. Make sure you listen, you subscribe, and you, go back and listen to all the other great podcasts that are on my particular site.
That's brilliant. You said that. I have never thought about that. I've never thought about promoting my past podcast.
It's good.
I've got 3 years of a podcast. Don't just wait for the next one.
Yeah,
fucker, go listen back to all of them.
Yeah, so if you're a new listener, shit, you've got months of shit you can listen to.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. So thanks, man. And as I sign off my show, as I always do, thanks, Joey Medina, for being a guest. God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys.
There you go.
I bid you adieu.
Nice.
Ah. In the basement of the mud flap house, flapping and poo. And they're underwear, fingers and nose. And poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three. Men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about booze and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you leave. Oh, won't you come with me and remask you leave?
Aloha!